Welcome to Podcast 83, a regular look at the news, stories, and trends related to Michigan's 83 counties, from Keweenaw to Monroe, Chippewa to Berrien. Brought to you by the Michigan Association of Counties. Here's your host, MAC Executive Director Stephen Curry.
Welcome to Podcast 83, everyone. This is Megan Kite, the Government Affairs Associate with Michigan Association of Counties, filling in for our usual host, Steve Curry, the Executive Director. He's not here today, so I am very excited to be hosting because we have a really exciting guest, Dr. Cheryl Kubiak. She's the Dean of Wayne State University School of Social Work. Welcome, Dr. Kubiak. We're so excited to have you.
Thanks, Megan. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's great timing because May is recognized as Mental Health Awareness Month, and we know counties on the front lines for a lot of these issues with mental health and our community mental health agencies, but really a huge issue that we've seen, we've heard from our members are within our jails, and I know that's kind of a specialty of yours. So if you don't mind, just kind of talk about your background, a little bit of your work at Wayne State and kind of what got you started on this path of research regarding our criminal justice system and behavioral health.
Oh, thanks. I actually was a mental health nurse for many years working in state institutions. And so I kind of had up close and personal experience in those settings. And the institutionalization, as you know, of individuals with mental health kind of went by the wayside when we went to a community model. And unfortunately, the supports never lived up to the expectations. And because of that, many people ended up in jail. When I went back to change careers into psychology and social work, I started working with incarcerated women who also had some pretty severe mental health issues, mostly related to trauma, PTSD, but bipolar disorders and manic depressive and schizophrenia. And because of that, and because of their incarceration status, often the reentry was very difficult. And so I worked 4 years. I actually ran a residential treatment program for women who were reentering for many years. And then when I went back for my doctorate, I really specialized in the area of trauma and mental health, and mostly how it relates to incarcerated populations. So after years of working within prisons, I decided that maybe we needed to start at an earlier time because as many of the jail and prison administrators know, prison exacerbates some of the mental health symptomatology. And so if we started earlier and we could prevent incarceration and instead divert to treatment, I thought maybe that was a better avenue than trying to treat the illness during prison incarceration.
Yeah, this seems to be such a growing issue even nationally, and really trying to get on the forefront of this and figure out, how to, divert these individuals, get them the appropriate treatment, put them in the appropriate setting. And a few years ago, the previous administration had started the Mental Health Diversion Council, who I know you've worked very closely with since, I want to say, was that created in 2013?
Yeah, we actually came on board in 2014, but okay.
And they've looked at a lot of different things, and Michigan's, I think been trying to move in the right track, but why don't you, talk about the work that you've been doing with the Mental Health Diversion Council, a little bit about that group, and, and what your role and your team at Wayne State's been doing to really, help them out on it.
Okay. The Governor's Diversion Council was created through an executive order. And during the last administration, Lieutenant Governor Kelly ran this Diversion Council that has representatives from all over the state who are representing different constituencies. So we have sheriffs and legal, both prosecutors and defense attorneys, and Michigan Department of Corrections, Michigan Department of Health and Human Services, and care, you know, juvenile representation. And so a wide swath of individuals who have a vested interest in this issue. So they started back in 2014 with two pilot programs. And counties could apply for this funding. And when they applied for the funding, they had to have something that generated from the community and define the problem and a solution around individuals with mental health issues ending up in jail. That was later expanded in 2014-15 to include an additional eight pilot programs. So the RFPs could be in a number of different domains. So they could be in law enforcement or law enforcement training, jail interventions, mental health courts, assisted outpatient treatment, reentry. So the communities themselves put together the proposals and suggested a pilot project in their county. We were brought in at that point to help them evaluate the efficacy of that intervention within their county, and did so for a few years. Most of the counties were either a community intervention team training, which is a 40-hour training for law enforcement officers, or jail-based interventions that involved community mental health. So we evaluated those interventions and we found some interesting predictors of who didn't return to jail and who may enter into community-based treatment. So I think that the two major takeaways from those early pilots are this, is that when law enforcement officers have training and facilities in the community that will support 24-hour drop-off, that they will change their behavior and bring people to crisis centers or drop-off centers after this training. And we saw a 28% an increase of 28 times more likelihood that officers would drop off at the crisis center after the training than before the training. So it's a significant finding, but the clincher is there has to be something in the community that offers law enforcement officers an alternative. So that's one take home. The other take home is that the projects that were jail-based projects that involved community mental health were much more successful at reducing recidivism and creating continuity of care when there was some element of discharge planning or warm handoff from the jail to the community. So we tried to emphasize those factors. At the same time, the state was interested in either expanding the number of counties involved or enhancing the resources within those 10 pilot communities so that their interventions could go across the whole criminal legal continuum. And in this field, we call it the sequential intercept model that basically says intercept one is when an individual ends up interfacing with law enforcement. The second might be initial detention. The third might be courts, fourth jail-based treatment or reentry. And then the fifth is actually looking at community probation and parole. So what the state Diversion Council said was, we want to see these counties influence intervention across all of those intercepts. And so that's kind of where we are right now, is that the counties have tried to expand their intervention opportunities from just one intercept or one system to multiple systems. And that's been a pretty exciting endeavor as the law enforcement officers, from the law enforcement officers through probation officers, are getting on board in the counties, getting training, looking at different interventions, looking at how to utilize resources more efficiently.
Yeah, and I don't want to cut you off, but I just I want to dig in a little bit more because I think it's so important for especially our members who may be interested in some of these things that you're talking about and engaging their, you know, local law enforcement or their community mental health. I mean, if there's a county out there that this is the first time they've ever heard of it, you know, who would you recommend they go to and try to really bring together to really start building these relationships and connect and say, hey, we need to, you know, we need to collaborate and you have to be at the table. You know, who are those people?
Well, I'll just backtrack a little bit to say that at Wayne State University, we established the Center for Behavioral Health and Justice. And the mission of that center is to provide technical assistance, support, kind of be the external facilitator that for counties that are really interested in looking at this issue and creating a change process. So one of the vehicles for that is we've been working with counties that signed up for the national stepping up model where, you know, they brought together their county commissioners and their law enforcement and community mental health and jail and said, we really are committed to this issue of keeping individuals with serious mental illness out of the jail. They got the folks together, but many of the counties didn't either have the support or the resources or a clear path forward with how to navigate the next steps. And so for those counties, we were actually given some funds from the state to say, hey, can you support and help these counties similar to what you've been doing with the counties with the in the diversion pilot program and facilitate or help them look at their system, maybe collect data for the first time so they understand exactly what the prevalence of mental illness is in their jails, or maybe do some mapping, process mapping to figure out how people are identified, when they're identified, and what are the services that they might be able to link to. So we've been working with we're probably in about 6 or 7 counties currently working with them on this facilitated change model. But the key folks in the community are, you know, a champion, and that can often be a county commissioner who thinks this is important. Maybe it's a financial issue with lawsuits within the jail. Maybe it's just a resource issue. Maybe it's just trying to take more advantage of the resources in the community rather than using jail as kind of the dumping ground. So I think it has to be a leader at the community level, but should include folks like jail administrators, community mental health representatives, maybe substance abuse, particularly in this era of the opioid epidemic. But to get those folks around the table and to begin talking about what their goals are and how they see the gaps in their current community and what might be done to fill those gaps.
Yeah, that's great. And we will be sending out, you know, more information from MAC to our members about the work that you guys are going to continue to do in these pilot counties or what you continue to learn with the council and also the Center for Behavioral Health and Justice. So, you know, I think there's a lot more to come on this. And especially I want to take a turn a little bit, but the new administration now, Governor Whitmer, has announced the jail and pretrial incarceration task force. I know you have a role on there. We have a couple members also, county commissioners also included on there, along with a number of other folks in different areas of the entire criminal justice system.
I'm hoping that and my role as kind of the victim advocate and crime survivor that I can bring a little bit more information about victims both in the community as well as in our jails. And many individuals with mental illness have also been survivors of crime. And I'm hoping that we can look at this problem about many times are the folks who have been found guilty or are incarcerated and yet to be found guilty are there because of a mental health issue that perhaps brought them to the attention of law enforcement, or a problematic interaction with law enforcement, or that they did commit a crime that was serious enough to, that's a public safety issue. But I hope that by using this lens of mental health and behavioral health, we can separate out who is a risk to the public and needs to be locked up, and who could be better served in our communities through intervention and treatment.
Yeah, we are so excited about that, that task force and the Pew Charitable Trust, a group that's come in and chose Michigan to do this. And I'm very excited that you're part of that collaboration. Knowing we only have a few more minutes left and we try to keep these pretty brief, but I don't want to leave anything out that you might want to mention. And then I definitely want you to let people know how they can, you know, look up the Center for Behavioral Health and Justice and, you know, try to keep tabs on all of your work through Wayne State.
Yeah. Well, I'm happy to, my email address is SPK, Sam Paul Kite at Wayne.edu, and feel free to email me anytime. But on our website, we also have many reports that we've written that include the data and finding from these 10 jails that are involved in the diversion pilot programs. And I want to say that it's an unusual data collection and not one that's generally available, because we combine the data from the jails and the state court administrator's office and the Medicaid data from the Department of Health and Human Services with some data that we collect that using valid mental health and substance abuse screens, so that we're able to do objective screening, which is an area that I've been a really big advocate for. We can't do anything about a problem if we haven't identified the problem. So we use a very brief screen at jail intake so that we have a really good idea of who's entering the jail with symptoms of serious mental illness. And then once we have that, we can look at what happens when they leave the jail. Do they come back? Do they get into treatment? What kind of sentence do they receive? And so it's kind of chock full of little areas that I think we can improve on that may not be that costly, but could make a big difference. And I'll just give you one or two examples. And one is time of exit from the jail. And what we found is that many individuals who leave the jail are discharged after business hours, so between 6 p.m. and 6 a.m. And what that means, that doesn't differ by whether you have a serious mental illness or you don't. So what that means is you're released from jail, likely without the resources or the medications that you might need in the community, increasing the risk that you're not going to be safe, nor are you going to get the treatment that you need. So changing the time of discharge for those who have serious mental illness might be a very simple fix that could save the county a lot of money. So I encourage people to look at the reports, and I'm happy to have myself or one of our team members come up and talk to county members about maybe some areas that they might look at that might help their county.
Thank you so much. I know when you told me that one finding a few months back when we were meeting, it's just really astonishing and really great work that you guys are doing. And, you know, it's not something that's going to cost counties or the state a ton of money. Like you said, it's just recognizing that that's an issue and then figuring out how we need to fix it and who needs to be part of that conversation. So I'm very, very excited for your continued work with Wayne State and now in the governor's new task force. And And hopefully with Mac, we will be doing more with you soon. We're going to put more messaging out and look forward to continued collaboration.
Thanks, Megan. I'm really excited to work more with you and the Association of Counties, because the county commissioners do really play a very big role in this issue.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of Podcast 83, the go-to source for all information about Michigan's 83 counties.